Remember that old public service announcement on TV? You know, the one that went, this is your brain, this is your brain on drugs. And then you saw an egg sizzling into a blob in a frying pan? Yuck. Well, today's addiction may be less subtle, but is it as harmful? What is our 24/7 wired world doing to our thinking? Our partner, the New York Times, has a story this morning, one of many stories they've had lately. They are very interested in this subject, about five neuroscientists from across the country who went on a technology fast. They took a week-long hiking and rafting trip in Utah, completely devoid of cell phones, email, you name it, to reflect on how such heavy and consistent use of technology affects the brain. Joining us now are two of the scientists who participated in the rafting/research trip. Paul Atchley, a psychology professor at the University of Kansas who studies teenagers' compulsive use of cell phones, and Stephen Yantis, a professor of psychology and brain sciences at Johns Hopkins University. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning. Good morning.
So, Paul Atchley, let me start with you. What was the point of this trip?
I think the point of the trip was to get us to reflect on not only our personal use of technology, but also on some of the research that's come out recently showing that we just seem to think better in natural environments.
We think better in a natural environment, and in fact, did you, Paul?
I felt like I did. I was at least able to connect a lot better with the people around me without a lot of the distractions we have on a day-to-day basis.
Right. This sounds a little, dare I say it, obvious?
Nope, that's probably true, but I think one of the problems with all the technology that we use is that the obvious becomes less obvious. We're so distracted by something that's held, you know, foot in front of us in our hand while we're using our blackberries and such, that we kind of miss the obvious. Maybe that's the point of the whole thing.
I find it ironic that while we're sitting here talking about how we don't really need technology, that you're, I guess that's a cell phone, is that what's acting up?
Well, that would be. That's right, yeah.
Well, no, wait. Hold it, Celeste. We never said we didn't need technology. We
said,
what is it doing to our brains? And Stephen Yantis, you are characterized by the reporter who wrote this piece in the New York Times as one of the skeptics as opposed to one of the believers. What were you worried about?
Well, basically, Matt was
Matt Richtel, asking, who was the reporter who did the piece in the New York Times today.
That's right. And Matt was bringing out one line of conversation that we had about how spending time away from technology can change your brain and change the way you interact with the world. And I guess as a scientist, I'm naturally skeptical of claims like that. And it remains to be seen whether there are permanent changes. I certainly believe that disconnecting from cell phones, from email, can be healthy, because just the fact of having the possibility of receiving an email message sort of takes up a little bit of memory capacity. A little bit of your monitoring of the environment is taken up by wondering whether an email is going to come. And when that chime arrives, you sort of stop what you're doing. You look up. It's sort of an automatic response, like Pavlov's dog.
And a little anxiety-making as well.
A little bit. I mean, you know, depending on the context, depending on what kinds of expectations you have, you always have to be kind of aware of these other things that are going to get in the way of what you're trying to accomplish. So being away from it for an extended period of time allowed all of us to really focus on both the beautiful environment that we're in and the conversations that we're having with each other.
Stephen Yantis, professor of psychology and brain sciences at Johns Hopkins University, and Paul Atchley, a psychology professor at University of Kansas. I have to ask, how long did it take both of you to sort of get used to this, number one? And number two, let's make it clear to our listeners, no real science came out of this, correct?
Well, we weren't doing experiments, but we had some really fruitful and productive conversations around dinner at night. Because we had this long extended period of time, although I knew all of these guys, we had interacted before at scientific meetings and so forth, we had hours and hours together in the raft, sitting around the campsite, able to talk about ideas that we had stemming from our own research and what we might do when we go back to the lab to try to further pursue some of those ideas.
And, Paul, how long did it take you to give it all up, as they say?
I was already in that state by the time we hit the water. I'll be honest, I actually don't carry a cell phone. My wife and I share one that is a pay-as-you-go phone. We have it turned off unless we want to make a call. In fact, where I live, I'm in a little area where I can't even get cell phone coverage. So I actually tune out for the most part.
Yeah, we can tell you don't get much cell phone
coverage,
exactly. Actually.
Well, Stephen, you know, let me ask you, if we wanted to make this a scientific study, how does one really go about studying and determining whether or not we function better without technology? I mean, what do you test?
Well, Paul did mention a study that was done at the University of Michigan in which they had two groups of individuals spend some time in an urban environment walking around and then perform a series of tasks that required them to shift attention back and forth and shift between tasks, and then perform those same tasks after walking around in a park-like setting where they were away from cars and other people, and they found that people's ability to shift between tasks was improved after having spent time in the outdoors. So you can set up situations in which you ask people to disconnect, and then you measure carefully, either through performance, how quickly and accurately they can perform tasks, or by measuring brain activity, how well people are able to control attention, how distractible they are. And that can lead to insights about clinical conditions like ADHD, schizophrenia, obsessive compulsive disorder, drug abuse. All of those are conditions in which an inability to focus and high distractibility impair everyday performance.
So there are implications to this. Stephen Yantis, here's a question for you. How long, it's not how long, tell me your reaction when you got back to your cell phone after this forced break.
Well, of course, there were many emails waiting for me. I was glad to be able to call my wife and tell her a little bit about the trip. But I didn't feel like I had to rush to it. I didn't feel like
your hands weren't trembling. You weren't excited. You weren't salivating.
No, not at all. I was a little sad actually that the trip was over because we had such a great time. But on the other hand, you know, plugging back in again and getting back into the flow of real life, you know, I needed to do that, and so that happened.
All right, deliverance with a difference, I guess. What it sounds like a great trip, and anybody who wants to give it a try, let us know. How do you think your behavior and your brain would be affected if you took a break from technology? Let us know. And we've just heard from Paul Atchley, psychology professor at the University of Kansas, and Stephen Yantis, professor of psychology and brain sciences at Johns Hopkins University. Thanks to both of you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.